taken, making payments and saving, so more fees are taken. And every day the gatekeepers are trying to stop a change. We cannot wait. Welcome to the blockchain.
Kelly Kersey to CNBC about the upcoming meeting on February 6th, the hearing between the SEC and CFTC on cryptocurrency and blockchain and ICOs. I think no matter how positive Brian Kelly thought about that, that the media will find some line and some quote that, much like the Indian news item this week, will get misinterpreted and we'll have to deal with that. But before I bring on our guests, let me just make everyone aware, including the guests, that the voices you'll be hearing in the discussion as we go into the second half of the show. We have Alex Solis from Solis Digital Assets, Sabine Priestley, engineer, author, Augie, the contrarian. And now we're going to be joined by Mark Principato, Mark P. Markets, for those of you that follow him on TradingView.com. So that's the first place you need to know to look is TradingView.com and just put in Mark with a C, M-A-R-C-P, Markets, in the search. You'll get his columns. Now, there's also a new website that he shares with Andy, a.k.a. Goldbug1, who was called away today, so he is not in the studio as we speak, and that's SeekingCryptos.com. And there's more than that, but Mark is the former director of futures and forex trading at SMB Capital, known for its world-class trader education. He also held CMT designation from the Market Technicians Association. He is a previous Series 3763 license holder. He's trained hundreds of students online and in person. Mark began his career in 1999 trading NASDAQ stocks during the height of the dot-com era. And he was with us last month, and he's been kind enough to join us again today. Mark, thank you for joining us on the Henry Raine Show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I imagine the SEC and the CFTC is something you're experienced with, especially in your trading. Is that assumption correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So what are your thoughts about this hearing-slash-meeting that's coming up next week? And who is actually the holder of the hearing, or is it like a just joint administration by the two of them?
Well, you know, I'm actually I think it's more of like a joint, combination of the both of them. But really the key thing that I heard when I first heard about this, the first thing that crossed my mind was that this is just basically something to focus on that creates a lot of drama. It's not going to change what's going on in the bigger picture. It doesn't have any effect on the technology or the expansion of the technology or all the revolutionizing that the technology is responsible for. They're just going to sit there, and they're basically going to talk about most likely negative things, I think, because if you think about it, if you really think about it on a very broad level, the CFTC and the SEC, they are regulatory organizations. Now, something like Bitcoin is sort of a threat to these type of organizations because they can't really control it. So, you know, and from that perspective, I think they're just going to say things like, you know, it's very risky, this and that, all the things that we already know. You know, now, if there's any positive comments that come out of something like that, that's great. But I really think overall it's going to be a non-event. It's just something that everyone likes to focus on because it creates a lot of drama and a lot of fear. And fear, of course, you know, causes the type of price action that we've seen recently.
Yes, we have. And it's been over the last few weeks, and it seems like every two or three days there's a different story that spooks the market. Are you looking at this as a potential buying opportunity, or you're just going to wait and react on Tuesday?
I've actually been pushing for longs for like 2 weeks now. I've been bullish on these lows, and I'm still bullish. In fact, I just wrote a report today that talked about some price action that's occurring as we speak that looks to me like a small reversal pattern, which could be the beginning of, you know, the next leg upward.
Well, in a clip that we haven't played, but that it was pointed out, and maybe some of the participants in the studio will remember this too, we're about back at the level we were in November before Thanksgiving. And then it seemed like everybody came home for Thanksgiving, told all their relatives about it, and we had this big influx of new users, and then it got another bump around as the Christmas holidays came in. And now we're pretty much back at the lows where either the new people have been shaken out or they're just sitting there on their hands because they don't know what to do. But we're back to the people that what now seems like a more calm run from 2,500 back in May up to 8 or 9,000 in 6 months or so. Do you agree that with that observation?
Well, yeah. First of all, this pullback, what we saw, you know, basically off of the 20K level, is very healthy and very normal. It was going up too fast to begin with. Okay, so a steep correction or a dramatic correction is not uncommon. So if you actually look at the bigger picture perspective, which I've been focusing on, you know, for this entire move, this move that we're looking at right now, if you know anything about Elliott Wave, this move is just basically the unfolding of a wave two. Wave twos are typically scary. They're bearish like what we're seeing right now. But the key to them is they don't make a lower low compared to the bottom of wave one. Now, the bottom of wave one on this thing is like 150. Okay, so essentially what I'm saying is even, you know, it's stabilizing around the high 7,000s, low 8,000s. There are actually some relevant support levels in that area if you look at it technically. But it's a very convenient area for a wave two to bottom because essentially what you're looking at is one giant higher low. Okay, so higher lows typically lead to higher highs. I remind my readers about that all the time. So if this is not something where you're going to buy the bottom and tomorrow it's going to be back to 20K. It doesn't unfold like that. Okay, something like this, you know, after everyone gets shaken out, there's still a lot of fear in the markets, and it's going to take some time before all those, you know, before all those drivers come back. Once we start seeing, you know, more positive catalysts, then we'll see people, they're going to start getting euphoric again, and that's what's going to drive the price, you know, to those new highs. But it takes time to build that. So my perspective, I'm looking at maybe over the next few weeks to months where this thing will find stability. It may test lows slightly again, but I'm not expecting this thing to touch 5,000.
All right, we're speaking with Mark Principato, Mark P. Markets. You can find him on Twitter at Mark P. Markets. The website is seekingcryptos.com. On tradingview.com, use Mark P. Markets on the search. You'll find that. We'll also talk about priceactiontraders.net later. I know we have some questions in the studio, but I just want to go back to a little bit of terminology for people that haven't heard you before or maybe haven't heard discussions about this. Just very briefly explain what the Elliott Wave is and what the second wave is versus third wave, et cetera.
Sure. Okay, so Elliott Wave is actually a framework, like a decision-making framework. It's a way to categorize price movements. It was developed in the 1930s, okay, by a guy named Ralph Nelson Elliott. And what he discovered really is that price action generally moves in a fractal nature. So there's almost like a geometric structure to this. And it's an evolution of Dow theory. For anyone that's really familiar with technical analysis, Dow theory is really like the foundation of the technical analysis that we use today. So Elliott Wave sort of grew out of that. And what it basically does is it allows us to categorize price movements on any magnitude or any time frame, and from that information, better determine what is more likely to happen in the near future. Now, it's not the solution to all of our problems. It doesn't give you precise predictions. It's not magic, none of that. It's actually just a framework that allows us to make reasonable decisions within a certain range of scenarios.
What's the primary scenario?
Okay, so, I mean, the primary scenario you're looking at, in terms of Bitcoin, you're looking at, you know, all right, so let me explain what an impulse wave is. An impulse wave is a five-wave structure, all right? So initially, wave one is the first wave. It's a very bullish wave. You know, it goes up to what we saw, like, you know, back up to 20K, that type of thing. It's very bullish, especially in that, in the way it unfolded. Now, the second wave of a five-wave impulse structure is usually the correction. It's a corrective wave. All right, so it's a lot of bearishness, bearish catalysts, a lot of negativity, a lot of fear in the markets. But wave two, there's a simple rule, okay, that Elliott Wave follows, and it, you know, it has stuck all throughout the history of its use. But wave two typically does not go below the bottom of wave one. Now, if it does, that means it cancels out that whole scenario, right? So if Bitcoin basically goes to zero, then it cancels out this whole structure. That's how Elliott Wave works. So to answer your question about what is the initial structure or the initial wave count, right now we have a structure that has basically five waves that create an overall wave one. The current structure is an overall wave two. Now, once this breaks out, again, which takes time, it's not going to happen overnight, it's not going to happen tomorrow, it can take days to weeks to months for something like this to unfold. But wave threes are typically very bullish and expansive waves, or, you know, in this case, bullish, but typically they're very broad waves. And the rule goes, the rule says that wave threes are typically never the shortest wave, okay? So wave threes always go beyond the point of wave one, the high of wave one. The high of our wave one is the 19,000, whatever that number is, at our current high right now. So wave three will actually be official when we break that level. We'll be most likely in a wave three, which then has plenty of room to extend until it finds its next resistance. And then we go into a wave four, which is typically very bearish, once again, similar to a wave two, okay? But the key to wave four is it shouldn't go below the high of wave one, which means we can see corrections, depending on how high wave three goes, we can see corrections that take it back to the 19,000 level, right, which is right now the high of wave one. And then from there, once that finds the bottom, then we're looking at a wave five, okay, which can go beyond. I mean, I can't even come up with numbers for that because we're talking at such a broad structure. You know, you can be looking at 30,000, 40,000, whatever. You know, I don't want to sound like I'm one of these crazy bulls that comes up with crazy numbers, but in a technical sense, that's what is possible when you're looking at it from a yearly perspective.
So that's contingent.
I know that was a mouthful.
That's contingent on the condition you gave for wave four. That
right.
It doesn't go below the top of wave one. Is that correct?
That's correct. As long as it stays above, wherever that wave four bottoms out, wherever that is, it needs to stay above the high of wave one in order to officially be a wave four. Once that occurs, and then once you start getting reversals and things like that, the next leg up is most likely a wave five.
So if that condition is broken, are we back to square one? We've canceled out that whole Elliott Wave process and we have to reexamine?
No. Well, what happens is if it breaks that level, then it throws off the impulse wave. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the whole thing is negated. What it means that is most likely you're in a consolidation or some kind of broader correction. And that's when things can get very confusing.
Okay.
So that's one of the reasons why I keep it simple. And I only look for impulse waves because when things start getting very choppy like that, you know, then it can really throw you off.
Okay. I need to say you're listening to WWPR, 1490 AM, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay, 1490 AM. Augie, you had a follow-up question.
Yeah, it's consistent. If any of these waves, subsequent waves, break below the first fall, if you will, that makes the cycle of the Elliott circumstance change all over again, evidently.
Well, that's correct. That's one of the things with Elliott Wave. It's very subjective in nature, okay? But if you keep it on a very simple, you know, a simple outlook or a simple use of it, you know, it can guide you properly to at least give you an idea of where you are in the overall roadmap. And that's how I use it. So, you know, when you use it on very small time frames, it gets very confusing. But when we're looking at it on a very broad basis like we are right now, you know, it's very simple. We have a large leg up, which is wave one, and we have this current corrective structure, which it hasn't gone below the low of wave one yet, so most likely it's a wave two, which, you know, can it eventually work its way lower? Anything can happen, like I always tell everyone. Anything can happen. If for some reason they decide Bitcoin is obsolete and, you know, it's just not going to be the coin of the future anymore, then we'll watch it go to zero. You know, I mean, that's a possibility. I think it's a small possibility, but it is one that, you know, we always must be prepared for. So that's how I look at it.
Okay. And to recap, because we've covered a lot of distance since your first analysis of Bitcoin there, so what did you tell our audience to look out for in the near term here?
Well, so right now, at current levels, I'm very bullish. I'm actually holding a position. I'm long All right, my average price is around $10,800, around there. So we're slightly below my average price, but I've been building a broader position. And I'm looking for a reasonable, you know, at least one leg back up to test the 12,500 area, up to like maybe the 13,000s, up in that area. A push back up there is very reasonable in the near term, meaning over the next couple of weeks sort of thing. That's the time horizon I'm looking at.
So, and then if it were to break through that, you would buy more, or?
Well, if it breaks through that, then most likely bullish momentum is now in effect, and we're looking at another leg up. In that case, where, you know, I would expect it to continue, I would buy, just for my own style, I would not add more in a situation like that. I would look for retracements, smaller retracements on the way up, you know, and try to add there. But right now, the way I'm positioned, I'm not really looking to add. I'm just actually, once we start hitting those levels, I'm looking to, you know, lock in profits.
We're speaking with Mark P. Markets of TradingView.com, also SeekingCryptos.com, Price Traders, PriceActionTraders.net. And one more follow-up from Augie, and then we'll go on.
You did open the door to a zero value. I'm just wondering about that open door.
It made Augie very happy.
Well, it's just making me curious here.
I mean, I mention that because, like I said, as a short-term trader, I mean, primarily I'm a day trader, so my point of view always has to be flexible. I always consider both sides. Now, whether the market is going to follow that or not, I don't know. I look for price action to support the scenario. I look for price action to tell me. I'm a listener. I'm not a predictor. I have no idea what the future is going to bring. I just go by what the market, you know, the picture that it paints. What it implies is what I go by. At the moment, I'm bullish. But, hey, tomorrow some news can come out and can knock the wind out of it, and it'll change the picture. So the way I protect myself, you know, for situations like that is I'm very careful with my sizing. I don't use margin. I don't do things like that because, you know, I am aware of the risks that are involved. People think that there's no risk in something like this, or they don't want to know about the risk part of it. They just want to know about the rewards. But as a trader, you know, with the amount of experience that I've had and the amount of losses that I've taken, you know, over the years, I'm very aware of risk.
The other question I have is, since the technology's there, it has a use or a value in and of itself, I believe. That's the positive side of this whole argument. Where is that going to go if the Bitcoin goes away?
Well, the technology is here to stay, and that's really what's got me so bullish. I mean, blockchain is still changing businesses. They're coming up with uses that, you know, are not even fully understood yet. Like, for example, they're even using it in the humanitarian section of the world where they're able to better track where people's donations go. I mean, there are so many uses and there's so many changes that I really can't see how, you know, with the expansion of the economy rather than a contracting economy, I really can't see how these coins, or something like Bitcoin, or the top ones, Bitcoin, Ethereum, you know, those type of coins, are really going to disappear as long as they have their use cases intact and as long as they have an economic purpose. So that's the way I'm looking at that. I say that, you know, my point is this. We are in an expansion, not a contraction, and that's why I'm bullish.
All right. We're going to come back with more with Mark P. Markets after the break. You're listening to The Henry Raines Show.
If you're a business owner, you need to start listening right now to find out how a few feet of empty floor space can turn into a steady stream of both money and new faces into your business. Hosting a Bifederal Bitcoin ATM gives you a leg up on your competition by giving your location a destination-oriented visitor that will come back time and time again. Frequent Bitcoin ATM customers become frequent shoppers in your storefront. To find out more, just call 877-855-BYTE, B-Y-T-E, or 877-855-2983, and you'll be talking to the same local business experts you've heard on The Henry Raines Show. Or just go to BikeFederal.com and fill out the simple form to begin hosting a Bitcoin ATM in your business. Don't wait. Start earning new revenue and seeing new customers right away. Call 877-855-BITE, BYTE. That's 877-855-2983, or go to bitefederal.com.
I drink a cup of coffee and start to combing out my hair. I drink 40 cups of coffee. 40 cups of coffee.
Wow, some people really love their coffee. But you'll experience much more to love than just the coffee at Mocha Joe's. The perfect spot for family and friends to relax with casual dining or enjoy the pastries and gourmet coffee shop at 3633 Cortez Road, West Bradenton. It will be love at first bite 7 days a week at Mocha Joe's. Thursday is prime rib night. Friday, all-you-can-eat fish. And don't forget the world-famous $4.99 Saturday burger night. Vegetarian? On a gluten-free diet? You won't be left out at Mocha Joe's. There's something for everybody at Mocha Joe's. 3633 Cortez Road West. Don't believe me? Then call them up and ask for yourself at 941-753-7094. Open Sunday to Wednesday for breakfast and lunch. Thursday to Saturday for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
40 cups of coffee waiting for you to come home.
Hey, this is Brian. I listen to it every week. I really like it. Me and my wife, we just stop our cars every Saturday at 12 o'clock, make sure we listen to the show. It's great. I'm learning a lot about these cryptocurrencies. Keep on listening.
It's the Henry Ain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. And as Brian just said, you can hear us right after the 12 o'clock news every Saturday till 1:30 or sometimes a little bit beyond, and hopefully expanding even a little bit more from that soon. We want to remind you about the next Bradenton Bitcoin cryptocurrency meetup at Mocha Joe's. That'll be February 24th at 3:30. Also, you don't have to just be pulled over in the middle of the street listening to us in your car radio. You can get it on demand. You can check all the different podcast platforms, iTunes. Podomatic.com is where the largest archive is, but SoundCloud, Stitcher, all of those, you can get it there. You also want to be aware on Facebook of the page. You're on Twitter at Henry Rain Show. But there is a new Facebook page also trying to build the community here on the south side of Tampa Bay, and that's the Manasota Bitcoin and Crypto Club Facebook page. It's open to everyone, and you can post your thoughts and ideas there. In the studio, we have Alex Solis, Solis Digital Assets, Sabine Priestley, engineer and author, Augie the Contrarian, and on the line we have Mark P. Markets. He is a TradingView columnist. You can find it, just search on M-A-R-C P. Markets there. You also have the new website, SeekingCryptos.com, which I'm going to ask him about in just a moment. And we also have PriceActionTraders.net that we'll find out about that. All these irons in the fire. Before we ask you about SeekingCryptos.com, Mark, I do want to find out, now, does your analysis for Bitcoin, because if you go to TradingView.com, you mainly focus on Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin. Do you see them following the same pattern right now?
Yeah, at the moment, they're all pretty much following the leader, which is Bitcoin. And, you know, we see that a lot. The relationship between these things changes on occasion, but there is no really fixed relationship like we're used to in other markets, you know, like with the currencies, you know, Forex and things like that. So, yeah, I would say that they're pretty much all on the same path.
Now, you have a new website, SeekingCryptos.com, that you're combined with our own Goldbug one, a.k.a. Andy, who was called away today, couldn't be here at the last moment. But I know he was real excited this past week because you were interviewed on the NASDAQ.
That's right.
Now, which program was that?
So there's a host on there, a reporter. Her name is Jill Malandrino, and she basically does it's called Trader Talk. And every day, pretty much, she interviews different people in the trading community that have different, you know, from different perspectives and things like that. So she has me on every once in a while just to talk about Bitcoin and what's going on in this space.
And is there a way people that are listening that can access that? Is it still available on demand?
Yeah, you know, you have to go to, I don't know exactly, I can't give you the link right now. I don't have it in front of me, but there is a link that, you know, where it's also on YouTube. She basically stores it all on YouTube, and there's a place to see all those videos. But you have to go to the NASDAQ Twitter feed to find it.
Okay. And so you have this project with Andy, SeekingCryptos.com. Now, what are you guys doing there?
All right, so that's our new website. And the whole point of that site is to serve as a market intelligence for the new era of investor, okay? People that are new to this, they're trying to figure out where to get all their information from. What we're doing is we are capitalizing on all of our resources and the people that we know and all the knowledge that we have and putting it all in one place where people can go, you know, basically a trustworthy source, a place where people can rely on the information. And one of the primary features, or I guess you could say value propositions to this site, is the fact that we will put a lot of research into the emerging cryptocurrencies or the emerging ICOs, the ones that are not on the main exchanges yet, the ones that still have a lot of room to run and where there's a lot of opportunity. Of course, there's a lot of risk, but what we want to do is bring these to light and give people at least a chance to weigh this information on their own and decide if this is a good investment for them or not. Because when we were first starting out in this space, the hardest thing to do was to find out where these new coins are, you know, where they're trading, how do you even get a hold of them, where do they go, what wallet do they go in, all these details. So we've decided to put a resource together that covers all of that combined with our trading and investing insight and knowledge, which is lacking out there, you know, in this space from our observation.
Well, that takes us to the next topic, because I asked you – it's a topic that's come up on here, and I knew you were coming, so I asked you if you could speak to this. It's not exactly directly the trading of the cryptocurrencies or the tokens, but it is part of this push from the mainstream and from Wall Street to get in on the action. And that's these new blockchain ETFs, exchange-traded funds that actually some trade on the NASDAQ, one trades on the NYSE. But there's four that have been introduced. Two are almost too recent to probably have much of a record at all. It's a matter of days. But the first two was the RealityShares NASDAQ Next Gen Economy ETF. That's a mouthful, but its symbol is BLCN. Now, this is a passively managed fund, which we'll get you to explain a little bit more. And then the second one to come out at a similar time was the BLOK, which, as I scroll through multiple pages here, the Amplify Transformational Data Sharing, which is, again, is a mouthful, but the symbol on the New York Stock Exchange is BLOK, and that's an actively managed exchange-traded fund. So first off, Mark, if you could just help our audience out, what's the difference between the passive ETF and the actively managed ETF?
Okay, well, typically, I mean, I don't know if it's different for these, but, you know, the typical definition is, you know, when you have a passively managed ETF, it's basically automated. To put it in the simplest terms, it's like an automated type of investment. So you buy some shares of this passively managed ETF, and they are going to buy some kind of equal amount of, you know, the tokens or the coins, you know, to basically represent those shares that you buy. And as the value of that thing changes, your investment will also change. It's almost like a mutual fund, you know, in a sense, if you want to give it some more traditional terms to compare it to. Now, an active ETF is one where there are decisions being made, or there's, you know, there's basically a manager that is also making, you know, decisions as far as what's being weighted in the portfolio or the index or whatever you want to call it that, you know, affects the value of the ETF. So, I mean, that's the best way I can explain it in simplest terms.
Okay, so let's look at this. They both have almost a month of trading now. Now, we look at the BLCN, and that is the passive. And one of the things that you're going to – not to get too much in the weeds, but I am going to give the top 10 holdings from each of these two. You're going to notice as I read these, none of these really just scream blockchain at you. You see the connection, but there really isn't, I think, a company that is the pure blockchain play? So starting with the passive one, and this, all of these holdings are about 2.5%. They have Overstock.com, IBM, SBI Holdings, Hitachi, Cisco, Intel, Microsoft, ZTE Corp, NVIDIA, and SAP. So names you've probably heard of if you've traded on the stock market or even just listened to a business channel for very long or maybe even turned on a computer in their last 10 years. The active one, the BLOK, that has core and secondary, and I'll explain the secondary in a second, but its core stocks. Now, this is interesting in a way in that the top 10 holdings are all around 5%. Just under or maybe up to 6.1%. So this means their top 10 holdings make up over half of their holdings, whereas in the passive one, the top 10 only made up about a quarter. So their number one holding is Taiwan Semiconductor. Two is Digital Garage. Three, SBI Holdings. Four, Overstock, IBM, NVIDIA, Square, Hive Blockchain Technologies, GMO Internet, and Citigroup, which may seem the most surprising of them all. Now, they also have the ability to go into secondary holdings, and both of these have a minimum market caps in the $100 million range. And anyway, the secondary holdings can include companies that invest or partner in such technologies, companies that participate in multiple blockchain industry consortiums. They can also get in on things that the general public doesn't have access to, warrant offerings and things like that. So what are your thoughts about the underlying securities that they're holding?
Well, obviously, all of those companies that you mentioned, most of them, I mean, you know, they're pretty well-known companies, like you said. They're very familiar names in the stock market. You'll hear about them on business channels. You know, my initial impression on something like that is, you know, you have these ETFs. The mainstream investor can now put some money in, and they're hoping for just some general appreciation, right? When you're holding companies like these, I mean, NVIDIA is a little bit more of a wild one, but, you know, you have Microsoft in there, you have Intel in there. Those are not wild stocks. So my initial impression is they're going to park your money in an instrument that is more stable and that will gradually appreciate over time as this technology takes hold and as this technology, you know, grows over time and matures, these companies are in position to benefit. So it's a gradual process as opposed to throwing your money in Bitcoin and watching it fluctuate, you know, 50% over a few weeks. So that's my initial impression. The other thing with these type of instruments, and I've experienced this, you know, way back when during the dot-com era, when ETFs were a new thing, okay, because before that, there were no ETFs. But back then, this is just something you have to consider. At that time, there were really not too many places to invest your money back then. There was, you know, the NASDAQ stocks, you had the New York Stock Exchange, you had bonds, you had, like, your basic places to invest your money. There were no ETFs. Once the ETFs started coming out, it basically started just spreading money all over the place. So what did that do? In my opinion, that started to shrink the ranges of all these different markets. Like we were trading stocks that were moving 20 points a day on the average. Okay? We don't see that now unless you're looking at something like Amazon. But back then, many stocks used to trade, you know, with 20 to 30 point ranges. You can make a lot of money when stocks are trading those kind of ranges. Once all this money was spreading around and not focused, you know, in a particular area or in a particular market, then, you know, it basically waters everything. It dilutes everything, okay? So when you have these ETFs coming out, I'm looking basically at the same thing. Money will be pouring into these over time. It's not going to happen overnight. You know, right now I would imagine that this is just so new, the volume is going to be low. The liquidity is going to be low, and the movement is probably not going to be anything dramatic. But over time, as more and more money starts to gravitate toward these instruments, it's going to dilute the effects that we're seeing in things like, you know, the main coins like Bitcoin and the rest of them, because now people have other alternatives. The money won't be so focused on one particular market. So that's, I mean, it's good in some ways. for the average investor, but it's not so good for the active trader who will now have to deal with smaller daily ranges and more noise in the market. It just requires more skill, in my opinion.
The two other ETFs, we won't go into all the details on them, but just so people know if they want to track it online and the symbol for one, the Innovation Shares Next Gen Protocol is KOIN, and the fourth one is LEGR. As we went through those, the first one was BLCN, that was the passive ETF. The actively managed one was BLOK. And actually, it's interesting. You should check these out just to see what their holdings are, because you could almost create your own portfolio by picking and choosing the best of the bunch out of here. I did notice on Ledger they added Alibaba as one of their key holdings, which the other two didn't have in their top ten. And in the coin, they had Tencent holdings. What about China and blockchain? You have any thoughts on that, Mark?
Well, China is the dominant force. You know, I mean, that's where the majority of Bitcoin miners are, right? And that's one of the reasons why it has grown to the magnitude that it has grown to, is because that's where it's all coming from. That's where, I would say that's where the majority activity comes from. So China is a big player in this game, you know, whether people realize it or not.
So, Mark, I'm going to ask you to hold on for a couple minutes with us, but I want to go over again your website so we get this in before we have to say goodbye. We've been speaking with Mark P. Markets, Mark Principato. So when you do your Google search, you want to use M-A-R-C P. Markets. Markets spelled just like normal. The websites of interest are SeekingCryptos.com. When you go to TradingView.com, you put in Mark P. Markets to get to his columns, and check out Goldbug Ones while you're there also. PriceActionTraders.net was the other website that we had not talked about. Do you want to give people a quick heads up about PriceActionTraders.net?
Yeah, sure. So that's my personal website. Basically, it's a place where you can find certain things. Like, I have an ebook that's geared towards someone who's new, just in markets in general, and want to get a sense of perspective or build a foundation on evaluating this price action based on charts, right? So I have an ebook for that. It's also a place where I'm going to be having, you know, video course available, things like that. So the whole idea behind that site is to provide content and provide information that people can use to better their own analytical process.
Okay, so Mark, I'm going to ask you to sit on a segment that we have weekly. We didn't get to it in the first half of the show, but since you're here, and one of the things that you're going to be doing with SeekingCryptos.com is uncovering new coins and all. Alex Solis of Solis Digital Assets, he has a coin of the week for us, and I'll be asking you if you've, A, heard of it, and secondly, what you think about it. Alex, what do you have for us this week?
All right, this week I have Endahash. Sorry. I've been sick for a while. I have Endahash. It's
symbol.
The symbol is IDH. It's on the Hitbeast BTC exchange. It's one of them. That's probably the most reputable one you can get it on. It's a brand new coin. It came out a week ago, January 25th. Now this coin right here is going to be huge because China, the number one job in China right now is to be like a YouTube promoter. Like, you promote products on YouTube and all that stuff. This is what Endahash does. And they already got huge accounts already. They have Nestle, Danone, which makes great yogurt, McDonald's, Fanta, KFC, you know, to say the least. They have huge accounts while working with them, huge brands. So I really believe in this one. It's the coin count's amazingly low. I only invest in low coin counts.
What does it do?
It's like if you had a million viewers on YouTube, what you would do is McDonald's would give you their product, and then you would, you know, show it around, and then McDonald's will pay you.
So they market the product placement.
Yeah, they're like YouTube, but they pay the promoter almost everything. YouTube don't. YouTube keeps all the money.
Okay.
Basically, and okay. It's a product promotion platform. Like me and you, we could, if we had a million viewers, we could go on there, promote products for McDonald's, for example.
Well, they should be crawling all over our podcast then. So, and it's been out, what, about 2 weeks?
January 25th.
Okay. Is this one that was on your radar, Mark?
Well, you know, I don't actually... actually focus on those type of coins, so that was not on my radar. I pretty much wait until they get onto the exchanges before, or, you know, like the bigger exchanges, before I start focusing on the technical side of them. Something like that sounds like a fundamental play.
HitBTC is a huge exchange. Huge. One of the biggest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, but like, so it's new to the exchange, but like, for my purposes, I'm focusing like on the technical aspect, and something like that sounds more like a fundamental play.
Okay.
If I just point one thing out, it has a 400 million coin count. This will hit $10-$20 easily.
All right. So you've heard it here first, Mark.
All right.
All right. So we want to thank Mark P. Markets, Mark Principato, for joining us today. Look to his new website with our own Andy Goldbug1, seekingcryptos.com. Then you can also check out Mark's personal website, priceactiontraders.net. Follow his column at tradingview.com. Just look for Mark P. Markets. He's also on Twitter at Mark P. Markets. Mark, thanks again for joining us. I hope we get to talk to you again sometime soon.
No problem. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. So, well, I know Augie had something he wanted to talk about, but, you know, we need to do a retrospective of your coins maybe next week or the week after so that So did you buy this on the initial coin offering, or did you buy it off the market?
No, I don't do ICOs because I like when I buy anything in life, I want to have it in my hands. I can't sit there and wait for it unless there's a waiting list. I get on the waiting list like Tesla, but I want it in my hands, so I have to buy it on the market.
So what price did you get in?
I didn't buy this one yet. I've been buying other ones.
Everybody's going to buy it and drive the price up before you get to it.
But it's 18 cents right now. If you turn 18 cents to $5, you know, you can get a couple thousand of these, make thousands of dollars. This is the low coin count, just like Dragon Chain. That was
the market
huge win.
60 cents, though.
Yeah, but it's okay. I don't look at the past. I'm not like the chart guy. I'm a crypto guy. You get into the market early, and you leave in the middle, you're rich.
All right.
Hopefully, if you leave in the end, you could be really rich.
Okay. Into hash, IDH. You heard it here first. All, in New York, they're already talking about it now that Mark P. Markets has heard it. Sabine, what do you have online?
I just wanted to share an event that's coming up that I'm helping out in. That's why I won't be here next week. On February 20th or 10th, we've got the Da Vinci's Fair and Bar Camp. It's at Manatee Technical College, 8:30 to 4.
Say the name of it again, please.
Da Vinci's Fair and Bar Camp. So, are you familiar with the Bar Camp?
No.
Bar Camp is cool. So, a bunch of people get together, geeks and smart people, and they do talks throughout the day. You do this on the fly. The schedule is made that day. And so, there's a Bar Camp aspect to this, and the Da Vinci's Fair is Microsoft and a lot of the local companies and makers come up and they show their stuff. There'll be drones, there'll be robots, there'll be all kinds of cool stuff. The bar camp aspect of it, talks that you can get into. If you've never done a bar camp, I promise you it's only weird the first time. After that, it's just great
I've
stuff.
I've heard that so many times. okay, time and date again?
It's February 10th from 8:30 to 4. Manatee Technical College.
Admission cost?
Free. Okay. Free.
Okay. And you could almost call in with a report next week.
Oh, yeah. I could do that.
Yeah. We will take calls here. Augie, we've been tap dancing while we waited for you to come back because you had something you wanted to share with the audience.
Well, actually.
Now you don't?
Well, I do. It's just that tulips are out of style since I think. Let's see. What year was that? 1436.
I need to get a lapel pin that is a tulip to wear just.
Right. Well, tulips are better than one. So it's kind of funny to walk around with just one lip. But nonetheless, when you trade in things in a couple of years, according to Krugman, who has a Nobel Prize in economics or Keynesian economics, that is, he basically says this is
despised by the libertarians. That we
absolutely
know.
Despised, and that's with no good reason. This country would be nowhere without Keynesians. But nonetheless, he predicts a two-year journey of final collapse. However, for this whole Bitcoin craze. But the prediction aside, I do think the technology is going to be used but not for coins.
All right. Well, I Alex is raised it. I will say I like Krugman on his macroeconomics and his Keynesian interpretations, but I think he's all wet on this.
Okay.
Alex.
I love all your death. I just want to say this about everyone who doubts Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. You know what happened? They seen Bitcoin at 10 cents, and then they were like, no, I should buy it, and then they didn't buy it. Now they see it at 10, 20,000, and they just hold a grudge against themselves. So they're still just, they're just so mad. They're frustrated.
Self-loathing haters.
Yeah, they're frustrated.
It's like penis envy if you don't have
one. Now. They're just mad. 10-cent Bitcoin, you should have got some.
Yes. As we all should have. All right. Well, thanks to Sabine. Thanks to Alex. Thanks to Augie. Hope Andy's doing well with his emergency that came up. Lennart and Lee, I hope that they are delivering ATMs like Santa Claus on Christmas Eve. And Colleen, wherever you're out there, we'll say hi to you too and hope to get you back in the studio sometime. We'll be back next week with another Henry Rank Show.
What you preach, and what you turn the other cheek.